way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on to fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on to fight inside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the real life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. And you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I had a bad experience today, and that's the 30th of November at the Toronto International Airport, or to be... more exact, at Customs and Immigration, or as they call themselves now, CBSA, that's Canadian Border Services Agency. I was coming back from an overseas flight. We got in about 5:30 this morning. Yeah, overnight. not much fun. So, you know, most of us stumble off the plane, we're tired. What happens is you approach machines, the bank of machines. That's if you're a returning Canadian, and I am. And so you're instructed to stick your passport in, and it magically recognizes it and gives back the information to you. Welcome back to Canada. Then asks to insert your customs form, which you filled out. Well, the way it's supposed to work is that you insert it and out comes a photocopy. It's the machine or the computer has read it. And so, well, I tried three different machines and each machine three or four times and it didn't work. That's not unusual. These machines are very iffy. So, okay, I stick my customs declaration in my passport. I'll work my way up the sheet line. And eventually get to an agent. So now he looks at, oh, I'm sorry, well, there's a car. You stand in front of his kiosk. And there is a, I'd say there's maybe a 10-foot distance between you and the agent in his kiosk. Well, there was a couple at the in front of the kiosk with the agent. He finishes with them. They depart. I walk up to him. He said, you have to step back. You have to wait until you're called. About a 25-year-old punk, just asserting his power. You know, just because he has something like a uniform on, he's suddenly Rambo or some such thing. Okay, so I walk back a couple of paces. They says, oh, yes, you can come now. I thought, you know, you really are a class A jerk. Anyway, so he looks over and makes a lot of markings. I think, I bet I'm going to go for secondary inspection. So go and get my luggage, and then you proceed toward the exit. But they take a look at your form. Well, as I have suspected, I'm being sent off to secondary inspection. I thought, this is the punk, just showing how he's got a bit of power. So I didn't show him enough respect. I didn't say anything to him, but I guess I didn't seem sufficiently contrite. So okay, secondary inspection. Well, a long, long snake line in there with various people. Some woman's in a wheelchair. I don't know what she was being sent for secondary inspection for. Several people had animals. Well, they have to have accompanying papers and all that. At least one person seemed to have an inordinate amount of things in the suitcase. Now, you're not supposed to, for instance, be bringing back meat for fresh meat or fresh fruit. In some cases, people try to sneak those in for God knows whatever reason. So people come and go, and finally it's my turn. Well, I'm in front of the guy I call a skinhead. Yeah, he's completely bald. And so he takes a look at my passport, and he's looking at, there's obviously material in the computer. He's pursing his eyebrows, and he asks me a lot of these usual stupid questions, like, where were you? Well, I told him. Several times he actually got it wrong. I don't know if he was trying to trip me up. Well, where did you stay? I thought, what the heck does it matter? I'm a Canadian citizen, so I have an absolute right to come back. I suppose the only legitimate reason that they would have to stop me is for anything I might be carrying that's contraband. Or where I stayed, what does it matter where I stayed? He pursued this several times. But what does it matter? Well, what would it matter if I slept out in the park? Not that I did, but so okay, we get that straight. Well, what do you do? I thought, well, what does it matter to you what I do? Yeah, so I told him I'm the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. He laboriously writes that down, but gets it wrong. You know, Canadian Association of Free Expression, I think he eventually wrote. Not that I'm going to correct him, because frankly, what does it matter? I'm a Canadian citizen. I have an absolute right to come back. Then he starts laboriously going through all my stuff. And I mean all. Starting with my computer. I have quite a lot of stuff in the computer bag. Equipment, several types of cords for to match the electricity in some of the various countries I visit. I have some notebooks. Well, he looks through that. There's a complete waste of time. They're in my handwriting. My handwriting's not that good. Sometimes I can't read it. Well, that doesn't get him too far. Goes through another pocket of the computer bag, and I have an envelope of 4,700 South African rand. What's this? I said, South African rand. What do you have that for? Well, does it matter what I have it for? Well, how much is it worth? I thought, well, you've got a computer there, bozo. Why don't you check it for yourself? So I gave him a rough estimate. The rand is, give or take, about 10 cents of the Canadian dollar. So 4,700 rand is about $420 or so. Well, what do you have it for? Well, I said I wanted to exchange it. But I said, it's a long story. I failed to do that. That is a long story. But again, what does it matter? Now, you're not supposed to bring back more than $10,000 in currency. $450, give or take, is nowhere near the ballpark, the difficult point. So, what next? Then he looks at my computer. They unfortunately have the right to my laptop. Unfortunately, they have the right to do this. And this, too, is just snooping and harassment. So he's looking. He said, well, am I going to find any pornographic or hate pictures here? I said, what was it? Or hate propaganda or something. I said, no. Well, he looks. I can't exactly tell what he's looking at because, the back of the computer is to me. Well, after a great deal of looking, I get the computer back. Well, now he's got my camera. He's looking at that. Picture. You've got a lot of pictures here. Yeah, then that's not illegal. I don't say that because these guys are all on a power trip. So he's looking at the pictures. Was this taken in Thailand? I look at the picture. I mean, I'm having trouble even recognizing what it was. I said, no, there are no pictures here from Thailand. Well, what's this? And so I look at the picture. I said, it's from Japan. You know, I was going to say, do you think they all look alike? No, but you've got to be very careful. These people have no sense of humor. Or you might not even get it. So, okay. So they look at more pictures. There's a picture with me and a lady. Is this woman your wife? Well, the person is Japanese. I said, no, she's a friend. Okay. So, finally he's finished with the camera. See, what are we on to now? Oh, yeah. I carry a shopping bag with books, a couple books that I'm reading, and newspapers. I try to use my time on a plane to as best as I can to catch up on my reading. That's another story. On these overseas overnight flights, and overseas in this case, they try to turn the lights out as quickly as possible, and it's very hard actually to read with I find it hard to read with the airplane's light. I do the best I can for a while. So he now goes through a collection of clippings. Now they're all from mainline newspapers. I guess he's very unhappy there isn't anything in there with a swastika or something like that. So, okay, he's gone through them. He pores over something called Frank Magazine. Now, Frank Magazine is a satirical magazine, like almost like comic magazine, been around for many, many years, about Canadian politics. And it's quite funny. And quite pointed. And he looks. Meanwhile, on the other side of customs, but they can't see me. My two sons are waiting for me. Well, actually, they're not just waiting for me. They've called a girlfriend of theirs, who's going to pick us up, because it costs a lot to park at the airport. And don't forget, by now it's about 6:30 in the morning. I can just think, this girl has driven at least half an hour. She's circling the airport because you can't park there. The usually non-white security people will shoo you away. If whoever you're waiting for isn't right there. So I thought, this is immensely inconvenient. They know where I am, but They probably thought, well, you might be kept for 10 minutes or so. I can't communicate with them. Well, I do have a cell phone, but of course, if I get on it, they'll go ratty. I mean, the Canada Border Service Agency, so agent. So I'm really quite frustrated, and he's going through Frank magazine. I thought, what does it matter? And he says, you don't like Justin Trudeau. I said, no, I don't. Do you like Rob Ford? Now, he's the populist conservative premier of Ontario. I said, yes, on most things. I mean, again, what does it matter? In slightly different circumstances, I might simply have said, I don't have to answer those questions. Whether I like Trudeau or not, or like Rob Ford, what does it matter? I'm a Canadian citizen. Whether I say, yes, I love him, or no, I hate him, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. This, you know, this is just time-wasting harassment. So, okay. he's gone through Frank magazine. Now even he's getting bored, so he leaves a couple of other bundles of papers untouched. Looks like I have a copy of the Occidental Quarterly. Now, it does have some articles about Jews. But I think it's rather intimidating looking if there's no pictures or anything like that. So he says, well, what's this? I said, it's an academic quarterly. Well, what's it about? I said, well, it deals with history and current affairs. Okay. Oh, yes, I also have a little plastic imitation leather container that contains the airplane. Some of the airlines give you at times. It contains earplugs, a pair of socks, heaven knows why, a little toothbrush or toothpaste. Well, he opens that, looks at that, puts that back. Okay, we're going to finish that. Let's see. So we've done the briefcase, we've done the cell phone, we've done the reading bag. Okay, now the pièce de résistance, my suitcase. By this time, I guess he is bored. There's the usual stuff in a suitcase, you know, a jacket or two, underwear, socks, a couple of shirts, a couple of bottles of wine, which I told him about from the very beginning, all very neatly wrapped in bubble wrap so they don't break. A little container of a little bag with two small tins of tea, which I bought. He's not interested in them. If this were serious, I would at least be interested to look inside the tins. I mean, it might be drugs or something. They don't care. He's not interested in that. He finds a couple of books. Oh, what are these? Are you learning Spanish? I said, well, I already know Spanish, but I brought them along to help me with vocabulary. Oh, okay. What does it, bottom line, what does it matter? If I'm learning Spanish, Serbo-Croatian, Eskimo, what does it matter? Anyway, we finally finished with that. He said, you can pack it up, you're good to go. I thought, you utter jerk. I had spent over an hour and a half in there. About an hour and 15 minutes of it with him. An hour and a half. Do you know what this is? This is political harassment. He asked me several times that I'd been denied entry to the United States. Well, a stamp in my passport said I had. I said, yes. Why? I said, I don't know. What do you mean, you don't know? I said, well, all they told me on the time I applied for a visa and on several other occasions was that I not convinced them that I have permanent ties in Canada. This is, of course, also bullshit political harassment. Of course I have permanent ties in Canada, and at one go around, I showed them my several years income tax forms, the deed to my house. Of course I have permanent ties in Canada. And in terms of my history of the entries into the United States, I have never stayed in the United States longer than 11 consecutive days. So it's not as though I sort of have a residence down there, or that I'm sneaking down to the United States what, to illegally pick lettuce in some field in California? Let's get real. I said, no, I don't know. I'll tell you what they told me. I don't know what's behind it. And I truly don't. Well, I sort of do. It's all political. But if you ask me, what do I know in the sense of what could I prove, and what have they told me? Well, I told them the same thing they told me, and of course it's all crap. So finally, I'm now good to go. I've been there an hour and a half. I get out into the area where people wait for people coming from international flights, and there are my sons, and the ride has spent the better part of an hour circling the airport, and arrives and takes us home. That was my experience this morning. I've been through this before, not for a number of years, but I have been through it before. It's extremely annoying. It is nothing more nor less than harassment of a Canadian citizen. Now, that they will say that they have the right to protect our borders. Yeah, right. Well, they're not doing a very good job of that, are they? So they've got the right to protect our borders, and they're searching for contraband and so on. Well, they sure didn't find any. I mean, I could have told them that. And I've got to say, I'd be reading a very extensive article from last week's National Post, which found interesting, because it was all about the RCMP and various other police agencies breaking up cocaine smuggling ring with some undercover work, and the smuggling ring was tied into El Chapo, you know, this big Mexican drug lord, gangster, etc. I thought, well, you know, there would be a legitimate interest as I was coming from Latin America in finding out, you know, whether I might be carrying drugs. If that had been the case, I mean, nobody likes to be searched, but fair enough, we don't want people importing cocaine, do we? Okay. But not, this had nothing to do with that. There wasn't any interest in, did I have something hidden in the lining of my suitcase, or I would have thought, well, the tin of tea. Well, the tin of tea, I suppose, could have been a tin of cocaine. You could look at it. It didn't even open it to see the little plastic baggie inside. Yeah, it didn't contain cocaine, contained tea. That didn't even seem to be of interest. And I thought, that, you know, that's what this is political harassment. They waste my time because they can. And it's just a way of saying, you're a dissident and we don't like you. And so, okay, message received. Well, much more serious was the attack that occurred on Friday at London Bridge in London, England. Another terrorist attack. a person with, a terrorist with a knife, stabbed and killed two people and wounded three more. One of them is very, very, very seriously. Very much to their credit, passers-by tackled the guy, working together, separated him from his knife, and waited until, now he was supposedly wearing some sort of a vest, terrorist vest,
with bombs attached. And that probably was what led to his demise, because when the police showed up, he was fairly quickly dispatched, shot and killed. Okay, well, some more background and commentary. So everybody rightly praised the passers-by who all of them were unarmed. Of course, this is Britain, right? The only people with guns are the terrorists. But unarmed, they tackled the guy and disarmed him. Anyway, here's the CNN report. Years before Usman Khan, you got that right. I know you're on the edge of your seats. Who would have done this? A guy with the last name of, let's say, Smith? No. Jones? No. A Scotsman named McIver? No. An Irishman named Delaney? No. Usman Khan, yeah, you got it. Okay, was shot and killed by police after the London Bridge stabbing. Authorities said he planned to start a terrorist military training facility, but it gets worse, actually. Khan, 28, was identified as a suspect in Friday's central London attack that left two people dead and three others injured. He was released from jail, this is Khan, in December 2018 on an ankle monitor after he pleaded guilty to terrorism charges in 2012. So, okay, the guy is 28. 7 years ago, when he was 21, he pleaded guilty to terrorist charges. He'd been in jail for most of the 7 years. There he is with one of those full beard. They always look to me like excuse the vulgarity, like a crotch full pubic hair, but okay. In 2010, Khan and eight others were arrested in London as part of a major counterterrorism operation. Some of the men were accused of terror charges over an Al-Qaeda-inspired plot to bomb the London Stock Exchange. Khan, originally from Pakistan, admitted to other terror offenses involving fundraising and recruiting for a terrorist military training facility under the guise of a madrasa, or educational institution, on land in Kashmir that was owned by his family, according to court documents. So he's a Kashmiri Muslim immigrant. Now, we're not quite clear, or at least it's not being reported exactly what his motives are, but if he's from Kashmir, he may have some issue with the Indian government, which controls Kashmir. Okay, what would you stab five white Londoners for? Anyway, authorities said Khan's family already had a mosque on it, and those involved in the plot were looking to infuse the group with cash to establish and operate a terrorist military training facility. Oh, that's great. Khan and another suspect in the case were accused of planning to train people at the facility with the goal of making them more serious and effective terrorists. They were accused of attending operational meetings, fundraising, and preparing to travel abroad to engage in acts of terrorism. Khan pleaded guilty in 2012 and was sentenced to 16 years in prison for his sentence. Let me think. 2012, 2019, that's 7 years, but he got 16. What? That's right, he was out on what we would call parole. We had a network of highly dangerous men based in three cities who were working together to plan terrorist attacks in the UK. Deputy Assistant Commissioner Stuart Osborne, Senior National Coordinator for Counterterrorism, said. During the 2010 investigation, nearly 1,000 police officers were involved in the operation, monitoring men in Staffordshire, Wales, and London. As Khan was released from prison in 2018 with an ankle monitor. An ankle monitor, but that all that does is tell you the person's location, doesn't tell you what he's doing. The attack began inside a hall, very near to London Bridge called the Fishmongers Hall. Anyway, what do we take from this other than the courage of the bystanders who intervened and brought this man down? And this, of course, is actually a parallel to what frequently happens on airlines. It's not the marshal that actually brings down the terrorists. I'll tell you why. Because most planes, contrary to what we were promised after 9/11, don't have a U.S. marshal. No, in the case of the underwear bomber and the shoe bomber, it was fellow passengers who wrestled the person to the ground, put a good beating on them, and held on until the airline staff could handcuff or restrain them. Here it was, not the police that stopped this guy, but five unarmed, and hugely to their credit, passers-by who got involved. My take is, if the passengers were armed, if Londoners, like people in many American states, could carry a handgun, this fellow might well have been stopped after the first stabbing. Of course, this is all speculative. Might have been, might not have been, but there's a chance. An unarmed population only encourages the terrorists. Well, okay, who's this guy? He's a Muslim. He is an immigrant. He has a previous, very, very serious conviction for being involved in organizing a terrorist camp in Pakistan, training people to go abroad for terrorist trainings, a link with Al-Qaeda. My question is, was he doing, first of all, on the street? Terrorism. This isn't being sent to jail for, let's say, a nonviolent crime like fraud, not that fraud's good or anything like that, but this is heavy-duty terrorism. He gets 18 years, he serves 7. Wow. A pussycat system. He's on the street being monitored, having some sort of monitor on him, but that doesn't seem to do the trick, does it? He couldn't have been being watched very closely, and he's right back to it. But most of all, why was he still in the country? He was an immigrant. Well, he'd shown his utter ingratitude to his native, to his adopted country. He'd shown his apparent interest in continuing in terrorist activities abroad. So his heart's elsewhere. Why was he not thrown out? Or why could he not have been thrown out? I just throw those questions out there. Let me tell you, because the system really isn't serious. No, it isn't. Protecting the UK is not really what it's all about. However, if he'd been a right winger, if he had made some harsh comment, let's say, about Jews, the police would be all over him, and he'd be in jail, as this happens with, for instance, the people I know, people like a very dynamic former British soldier, translator, Jeremy Turner, usually called Jez, who organized the London Forums for several years. He eventually went to jail for nonviolent comments he'd made about the role of Jews in the United Kingdom. See, that's the problem. A failing state doesn't know who its friends are or its enemies. Well, let's put like this, a state where the ruling powers have loyalty as other than to the British people. I've lost it. Anyway, so the good news, terrorists down. Bad news, two white Britons killed, a third very badly injured, might die few more will probably recover from their wounds. Tales of a failed state. Interesting information from Hungary, which is one of the hopefuls, I think, on the political scene. And this is actually written by Michael Walsh, who's been a longtime patriot, and it's called "Drags, Fags, and Queers Showing the Door." I think you know where this one's going, but it's actually really good news. Hungary has pulled out of the Eurovision Song Contest in speculation that the annual competition is too queer for the country's pro-family government. Hungary has not given an official reason for the withdrawal. However, a source at MTVA, that's the Hungarian broadcaster, reportedly said staff believe the move was about Eurovision's association with lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transvestite decadence and degeneracy. Well, good for them, I should say. I better clarify the them. Good for the Hungarian government. Standing for something. Standing, my God, for the family. You know, and I mean, like, the traditional family. Susie and Sarah have a kid. No, the traditional family. I was not surprised. It comes from the institutionalized culture of MTVA, the anonymous source told the British newspaper in a report published last week. The source said no explanation had been provided internally, but that positive coverage of queers issues was discouraged in the newsroom. The Budapest-situated broadcaster declined to reply to questions that were asked. Also, the Hungarian website index.hu quoted MTVA sources as speculating that the government thinks Eurovision is too pro-homosexual to participate in. When an opposition lawmaker last week asked the government minister why Hungary was withdrawing from Eurovision, he was told that the nation's broadcaster was responsible for the decision. pro-government commentators have cheered the withdrawal as a win for opponents of the LGBTQ agenda. Magazine editor András Benczik said Eurovision has, quote, been reduced to a homosexual flotilla. He went on to say that staying out of the contest was good for Hungary's mental health. Now, yeah, there is some really healthy, virile response. Many young people thought that this is something for people under 18, but at this event, the destruction of public taste takes place with screaming transvestites and bearded women. Benczik, he is an editor of a conservative magazine, said. In 2014, Austrian singer and drag queen Thomas Neuwirth, whose stage name is Conchita Wurst, won Eurovision with the song Rise Like a Phoenix. The victory made him an international shirt-lifting LGBT icon. There's a picture Conchita Wurst, with a dress, a small bust, clearly man's hands, long flowing hair, beard, you know, transvestite. Sicko. Hungarian officials have lately sent out other signals of opposition to the LGBTQ agenda. Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who has repeatedly said that marriage is between a man and a woman, recently launched a family first policy aimed at helping traditional families and boosting birth rates. Why don't we try that? One of the alleged reasons for Canada's massive immigration intake, but most of it, almost all of it from the third world, is that, well, we have below replacement birth rate of a 1.5 children per woman of childbearing age, we would need 2.1. But if you raise the logical response, which would be, well, okay, why not have a pro-family policy? Maybe even some sort of incentives for people to have children. And I'll get into that on some other program. Well, they go very, very quiet. Because they don't want that. They don't want white people having babies. They don't want traditional families. Because the basic long-range goal is to destroy us. Hungary takes a different view. In August, István Boldog, a member of parliament from the ruling Fidesz party, called for a boycott of Coca-Cola over an ad campaign featuring queers kissing. And in May, the speaker of the Hungarian parliament, László Kovár, said same-sex adoption is moral equivalent to pedophilia. Interesting comments. LGBTQ activists warn of global denial of queer rights from Brazil to Russia. In the United States, an annual survey has shown young people's tolerance of LGBT people falling in recent years. I'm not surprised, and that's healthy. The scandal recalls opposition to Eurovision in Russia, where a member of parliament called for the country to withdraw in 2014, saying that participating would contradict the path of cultural and moral renewal that Russia stands on today. Well, you know, there is a really healthy response, and you know, good on Hungary and good on some of these other East Europeans who are really standing for something. I'm going to play a song. I've always liked. I've always liked Ray Stevens. Ray has a great sense of humor. He's a great songwriter and a comedian. And his latest target is one that I'm sure you'll really appreciate. His latest target is the whole global warming thing. And as usual, he approaches it with such a devastating devastatingly funny approach. And this is a great video, but it's also a song. So I'll play that for you now. This is Ray Stevens on global warming. This is the global warming song, and you can see it on my Facebook, or if you would like a link to it, I'd be glad to email it to you. Of course, my email is paul@paulfromm.com, and this is Ray Stevens with the global warming song, which is what you're going to hear next. Here we are, Ray Stevens and the global warming song. which, unfortunately, because of this rather slow connection, it may take us another couple of seconds to get to. This is the global warming song with Ray Stevens.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gulliton brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in a new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Next up on the Real Estate Show, we have the Gullible Brothers, live via satellite from the east coast of Antarctica. Hello, boys, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm Gary, Barry Gullible. This is my younger brother, Justice Gullible. Thanks for having us on the show.
You bet. What actually do you have available in the way of land?
We got beautiful home sites available, which ocean front once the ice melts a little bit. And it's cold. And now we've got some beautiful farms that are more inland, as soon as we lose about 40 feet of this snow.
Oh, Lord. I'm also working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, boys, what's the weather like down there? Sounds cold.
Well, it's not too bad. 62 below, but at the moment wind chills is 100 below. But spirits are high. We've been told it's definitely gonna rise in a little while. There's records and 7 feet of snow and all. But Al Gore said it's gonna be okay. Oh Lord! Well, Justice, run! And here comes a polar bear!
I'm all for working hard just to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, we'd just like to thank the Gullibles for joining us today. Barry Gullible, any last words for those who may be looking to relocate once the rest of the world floods? Oh my goodness. Okay, Justice, how about you?
I can't feel my feet.
Ray Stevens and the Global Warming Song. He's just a first-rate entertainer. Here's another song kind of with a comic twist to it, and this is a song is by Brian Lewis, and it's "I Think My Dog's a Democrat." Sometimes you slay them better with humor.
Well, I think my dog's a Democrat, and it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence that all points towards the fact my dog might be a Democrat. I pay for all his health care, and I buy everything he eats. I provide him with a place to live just to keep him on the streets. But he just acts like he's entitled, even trying to unionize the cat.
I'm in Amsterdam, which is without a doubt the cannabis capital of the world. And that's because of the enormous, almost unbelievable interest that investors like you have in the marijuana book.
Oh, what happened? Is my dog's a Democrat. Here we are.
Yeah, I think my dog's a Democrat. I'll eat you up.
TV, he looks the other way.
What difference at this point does it make?
I know he's a liberal, even if he won't admit it. He pooped on my living room rug and tried to tell me George Bush did it. Had some good times, and he's been fun to have around. But if he ever barks about my right to bear arms, I'm gonna have to have him put down.
Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
I'll pay for all his health care.
Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side. Let me go ahead and play a few songs from the Possum, George Jones. This is George Jones, sometimes called No Show Jones, great entertainer.
I'm happy.
bake today. She paints a steel can just because I haunt the same old places where the memory of her.
Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Prom for our people.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones here firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen.